Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. Well, I'm recording this from a faculty member's office at Dominican University in a suburb of Chicago, Illinois. I'm going to be speaking there as soon as I get finished recording our conversation today, the interview, recording Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm speaking to the students, and the subject is called Women in the Peace Movement. I'm also supposed to talk about the case of the Cuban Five, and I'm writing an article about that that I'm going to post at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox Blogspot. And I'm also supposed to talk about Cuban-American relations. And I just found out something very exciting. I probably will be going back to Cuba next month to do a colloquium around the Cuban Five in Holguín, Cuba. So Cuba is a country and a subject that's very near and dear to my heart. But today we're going to be speaking with somebody who is also near and dear to my heart, a very good friend of mine, a very courageous woman, a friend of Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and probably somebody that you consider a friend, even if whether you've met her or not, and somebody who is, to me, always on the side of peace and justice. So our guest today is ex-Congresswoman from the state of Georgia, Cynthia McKinney. Cynthia McKinney, welcome to welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
I know. It's been too long, Cindy. I've been missing you.
Well, we're both busy, but you've been extraordinarily busy in the past few months, haven't you? Tell my listeners, I think most of my listeners know what you've been up to, but tell them about your grueling schedule since you returned from Libya.
Well, I did about, I went on a truth tour, and it just kept expanding. So I think the final count was 29 cities in about 40 days.
Wow.
So it was literally amazing. And the reason it wasn't like, you know, in 30 days is because I had to take a week out because I've started a PhD program, and I actually had to do some work. And
wow.
And the reason that I have been sort of very low-key is, of course, I got very behind in my work, and I've been putting my nose literally to the grindstone to make sure that I get all of my work done so that eventually, maybe, I can get back out on the road. But you caught me at a very interesting time because this is the first day, actually, that I have had to unpack, and then I had to wash my clothes and then repack and then go through the mountains of material that people gave me along the tour. So the message is, if you haven't heard from me, it is coming, those of you who were there with me on the tour and gave me a packet of information or gave me your card and told me to get back to you, that is what I'm in the process of doing literally right now. When you called me, Cindy, that's what I was doing, going through everything so I can make the contact and reconnect with the people that literally thousands of people in the 29 cities that included actually three cities in Canada. And every venue was a standing room only crowd. And the reason, I believe, is because by now the people have clearly understood that they cannot rely on what they see on the television, what they hear over the airwaves, they can't rely on that, and they have to search for other opportunities to hear what's going on, and then hopefully what they will do is weigh the two and then make their own minds up.
Well, I saw you when you were out on your tour, too, really, an overflow crowd in San Francisco, and you did, but there were, part of the people there were criticizing you and saying that your report was false. And I'm here in Chicago, like I said, and the person who is driving me around saw you when you were in this area, said the same thing happened. What do you think was behind those people who came? Who do you think were behind those people? What do you think was behind their coming out to basically say what you're saying is false, that the rebels were that the rebels are, you know, a heroic revolutionaries, and Gaddafi, you know, is a public enemy number one around the world. What do you think was behind that?
Well, it's very interesting. Now, there are some people who have legitimate grievances with any government.
Right.
They would have legitimate grievances with the Jamahiriya. And I would caution you, Cindy, that Libya is 6.5 million people. Mm-hmm. It's not one person.
Right.
So when we talk about Gaddafi, let's also recognize that there is a system of government there that is larger than one person. And so now, if there are legitimate grievances, I think that the way to deal with those legitimate grievances is in the international arena, in international court system. But, you know, I have grievances. Look, what we just, and I'm from the state of Georgia, we just murdered an innocent young boy.
Right.
I would never call France and Britain to come and bomb my country and use depleted uranium in my country if I had legitimate grievances. I believe that my grievances against the United States are legitimate, but we use a different way to exercise our right and attempt to get heard. And so these people, first of all, they called in depleted uranium, helicopter gunships, no telling what other kinds of weapons. The wounds that I saw when I was in the hospital looked like those weapons that were used against the people of Gaza that are called dime weapons, which is this new kind of weaponry. So that is what was going on when I was there. Now, of course, the situation is far worse.
Right.
And Libya has been completely destroyed. Completely destroyed in the way that Iraq has been completely destroyed. Afghanistan, completely destroyed. Pakistan, well on its way to being destroyed as a political entity, unless the people of Pakistan stand up and say no to NATO, led by the United States, which has a plan to engulf Pakistan in confusion, chaos, and then ultimately a loss of control for the people. And unfortunately now what I was told by the people who I have been in contact with, who I was there with, they told me that Tripoli, you would not recognize Tripoli. And that saddens me.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can imagine Tripoli, 1.5 million people, and they're dropping bombs as people are driving to work or whatever, you know, they're dropping bombs.
Mm-hmm.
The partners, they were called, the African migrants who had come to Libya because Libya gave them the opportunity to work in dignity,
mm-hmm.
and to raise their families and send their remittances back home so that their families back home could also live in a modicum of dignity. And those people were and still are, the ones who are there are no longer there, at least in the way that they were, at least the group that I'm about to mention.
Mm-hmm.
They gathered at Bab al-Aziza, and there was one Libyan who was in, he was abroad, and he was a dentist. He decided that when all of this happened, he would come back, and he served as my translator, my interpreter, when I would go into Bab al-Aziza and see what was going on. They would have a party every night. And when NATO sent those bombs into Bab al-Aziza, they were bombing innocent people. Some of those people, the crowds began to grow because as people, more and more people became homeless due to the bombings, they would set up their tents and they would also join what started out as the partners who had come, and these are largely Africans from other parts of the continent who were so loyal to the opportunity that they had been given to live with a modicum of dignity,
mm-hmm.
that they said that they would stay there instead of going back home. So they stayed at Bab al-Aziza, and they would have this, they would have the drummers come out, and they would dance and chant and do whatever. And this went on every night, and every night NATO would bomb.
Wow.
Then NATO bombed them. NATO didn't bomb beside them. NATO mm-hmm. bombed them.
Oh.
And just about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, I got a message that the dentist who used to perform my translations for me is no longer answering his cell phone. He's probably dead.
Oh.
I am so
terrible.
I am just beside myself with outrage at people who want to reduce criminal behavior to opposition to a political figure. There are people who dislike me intensely.
Mm-hmm. I know the feeling.
And one of them was a journalist. I have to tell this story, journalist, who said on his show that I should be lynched.
No.
And this was during my, when I was in Congress. So my staff read, I've become accustomed to this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
My staff read this, and they were stunned. They were horrified. They went to the FBI. They reported this gentleman to the FBI. Only to find out about 3 years later, when he was being prosecuted for making some threats against some white politicians, but he got prosecuted for that.
Mm-hmm.
What we learned, his defense was that he was on the FBI payroll and he was being paid to make those statements against me. That's why there was no recourse when
right.
we went to the FBI.
Right.
So even in a situation like that, I would never say, let's go bomb my opponents.
Right.
It's not the way I think. But these people have decided that they want to destroy their country and fill it with the residue or the remains of depleted uranium, and you know what that does genetically.
Right.
So that they can have their country. Now, I have teamed up with some of the independent journalists who were among the last to leave, and I'm hoping that we can have Mahdi Darius Nazemroya on your show.
You're right. We're trying to work that out.
The last piece that he wrote is extremely instructive because people want to talk about one person. Well, let's talk about one person. But let's talk about the person who went to the Geneva and said that 10,000 people, I think the figure was actually 6,000 people, were killed. What Mahdi pierces so carefully is that there's no evidence. There was never any evidence.
And the person that went there said that Gaddafi killed 6,000 people.
There was never any evidence. And in fact, I don't want to tell everything that we're in the process of doing. But it is clear that the human rights commissioners also understood that there was no evidence. Mahdi has listed the names of the human rights organizations, the so-called human rights organizations, that signed on to the letter from this particular Libyan person.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look through the list, if you were not a questioning person, you would say, oh, my goodness, this is authoritative. This is, we have to do something. But anyone of responsibility should have asked, where's the evidence?
Mm-hmm.
There was never any evidence. Now, this is eerily similar to the testimony of an Italian who was in the European Parliament right after September 11th happened. And he has since gone on to do a film and write a book about his experience. But right after September 11th attacks happened, a meeting, a ministerial-level meeting, was held of NATO. And, of course, you know that NATO is a collective security organization,
right,
which means that an attack against one can be an attack against all if
mm-hmm.
the relevant articles are invoked. And this ministerial level meeting right after September 11th was to invoke the collective security agreement. What this Italian member of the European Parliament tells me and all of us in his testimony is that the United States said, we've been attacked, we've got the evidence, we know who did it, but we can't tell you, we can't show it to you, we can't share it with you, but we want you to attack Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And on the basis of no evidence, once again,
right,
NATO is doing what it's doing right now today, 10 years later in Afghanistan. It's spread it now to Pakistan.
Well, I was listening to an interview that you and Mahdi did with KPFK in Los Angeles, and they played something that Wesley Clark, I believe it was Wesley Clark, who was former commander of NATO, said that there was a list of countries that the U.S. was going to invade. And it was after, I think, they were bombing Afghanistan, but before the invasion of Iraq. And Iraq, of course, was on it. Syria and Libya were on that list. So this has all been, like, premeditated many years ago. And not only that, but recently the UN has recognized the transitional government in Libya as a legitimate government, while refusing to recognize an independent Palestinian state.
Well, I used to be, my undergraduate at University of Southern California was international relations. I have my bachelor's degree in international relations. My master's degree from the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy in Boston, which is a school for the study of international affairs.
Mm-hmm.
I am an internationalist. And, of course, now, of course, a globalist.
Right.
But
not in the bad way.
Not in a bad way. That's right. But now... And I honestly have believed in the United Nations, but not anymore.
Right.
Not anymore. And, you know, I saw what the United Nations was supposed to do in actually my first involvement with what the UN was supposed to do was with Rwanda. But prior to Rwanda, there was East Timor. So I have seen the failings of the United Nations. Of course, now we can list among the failings, we can list Haiti as an abject failure, and it was the UN that brought in the cholera, and no reparations have ever been paid to the Haitian people for that. The United Nations peacekeepers go around the world, and with them go all of the vices known to humankind. So not anymore. And so the United Nations has become a tool,
right,
of oppression.
Just
from
like
the aspect of justice. So apparently, you know, as I've traveled, I've noticed that there's a kind of apartheid around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And now that apartheid even extends into the global economy, administration of justice, culture, such that there was a time when the United Nations, I really believe that the United Nations was there to protect people, to protect cultures, to protect, but not anymore. I don't believe it. And so I think that as we look for new structures to promote peace and to promote our values, the United Nations is one of those structures whose time has come and gone.
Well, you know, Cynthia, when the UN first passed the resolution, the no-fly zone in Libya, I sent out you know, an email to my supporters, and I said, you all know that a no-fly zone is just code word for we're going to begin bombing soon. And it was just a few days, and in fact, it was the anniversary of the initial invasion of Iraq in 2003 that the Obama administration started bombing Libya. And, of course, there was no congressional approval of that. And people told me, and this is gonna be my last question because we only have a few minutes left. But people told me, and people unsubscribed from my emailing list because they said that I don't care about the people of Libya. What has this UN resolution and the resulting U.S.-NATO, bombing of Libya? Has it helped the people of Libya in any way? Was it wrong for me to be concerned if NATO and the U.S. was going to be beginning a bombing campaign in Libya?
You should never be concerned, Cindy, when human life is at stake and the war machine of the United States and its allies is revving up for action. So you should never be sad that you were alert.
Mm-hmm.
This matter of the bombing of Libya, the destruction, the total destruction of a country, is not about one man, but it is about one person. It's about each one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is that we truly value. And if I am deeply disappointed in people who call themselves a part of the progressive community and who support what I saw in Libya.
Right. Well, I can't believe that we're already out of time, and I have to run over to the lecture hall now and give a talk to the students here at Dominican. But do you know the website that my listeners or our listeners can read a copy of Mahdi's latest article?
His article is located at wbaix.org. I believe, you know, that's really pitiful. I'm sure it's on globalresearch.ca.
Right. And I'll also be sending a link and putting a link on my website to that article. And how can my listeners add to your burden and get a hold of you?
Well, I'm always reachable at cynthia@runcynthiarun.org. And then, of course, there's the relevant Facebook and Dignity, I always encourage people to reach out to dignity.ning.com, but there's Facebook and Twitter that's by my name or either Run,
right.
Cynthia Run, so people can find me on the Internet.
Well, Cynthia, as always, thank you for your courage and thank you for being always on the right side of the issues, or at least on the good side of the issues, and
that's right. I'm always on the peace side.
Yeah, and good peace and justice side. We can always count on you to be on that side. And good luck with your studies.
Thank you.
Okay, we love you a lot at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. So keep up the good work.
Okay. Bye bye.
That was our guest, dear Soapbox friend and friend of peace and justice, Cynthia McKinney. And as always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my producer, Mikey, my sister, Dee Dee Miller, for transcribing the show. And hopefully we'll have a transcription of this show up on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox Blogspot soon. And I'd like to thank you for listening and Cynthia for being our guest today. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
I must make my witness. have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.